When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to On the Continent, your definitive guide to the week in European football. I'm Dotun Adebayo.
I'm Andy Brassel.
And I'm David Carpage.
On this edition, who plays the Barca way the best? The PSG coach or the Barcelona coach? Also, has Atletico Madrid done enough in the first leg of their Champions League quarters to proceed to the semis, or will their away form come back to bite them in the Dortmunds? And after the first leg of the quarters, who are now the favourites to win the Champions League this season? City, Arsenal, Real Madrid, Bayern, or any of the above? Oh, my word. We've had an amazing week, let's be fair, yeah, of Champions League football. Can we start with PSG and Barcelona, though? David, did Barcelona win this or did PSG throw it away?
I think both can be true. I don't think it needs to be exclusive. I think PSG set up from the start was wrong. Barca's was right. Barca played a very bold, brave game, I thought. Luis Enrique, to his credit, addressed it at halftime, made a change with Bradley Bacala coming on, which changed the course of the game. And then there was a response by Xavi with his own sub in Pedri, who had an instant impact in terms of an assist and absolutely absurd assist, it should be said,
Well. Oh, yeah.
Which swung the game back to Barca, and Barca probably should have had more on the night if you look at the chances. So it was a really interesting game from that aspect. I think subs sometimes ruin the flow of a game. Quite often they do, especially at this stage. But this actually enhanced it, I thought. I thought that it was really, really... It was a fantastic game to watch. Despite all the goals in the previous night, this was my game of the week. I thought... Brilliant. Really was. It was a spectacle.
If you looked at Luis Enrique, the PSG coach, at the end of the match, he looked like a man who felt that his team had thrown away the possibility here in this first leg, Andy.
Maybe. I guess we talked earlier in this week in the Ramble about how Arsenal conceding two first half goals to Bayern, if you go back 3 years, that finishes them in the tie, probably. And you would say the same about this result. This is a result, if you go back 3 or 4 years, like to before the abolition of away goals, you're completely stuck. Now, there are some moments, again, as I said earlier this week, where you really miss the lack of away goals. It takes away a layer of intrigue. But I think from this week's ties, you can see where the people who took that rule away are coming from. Like this, for example, the second leg of this, it wouldn't be as dead as a dodo, but it would be difficult. It would be really, really difficult for PSG. Whereas I think that it's quite open for them to go and change things, particularly at Montjuic, where Barcelona haven't been particularly spectacular so far this season. It's not really home. But the point you made at the top, Don, is what I wanted to home in on, actually, when you were talking about Luis Enrique there. I think this game made clear that Luis Enrique does play the more Barcelona-y football than Barcelona.
He started with a false nine.
It's clear. Exactly. And it was a dreadful mistake.
It was terrible. Asensio was absolutely awful.
And that's the question, though, I suppose. There are two questions. Firstly, did Luis Enrique, with the team he picked, really give his players the tools to succeed? I'm not convinced he did. And the second thing is being more Barcelona-y or more old-school Barcelona-y actually desirable? Because I think, if anything, this wasn't just a great victory for Xavi in terms of going away and winning against a big rival. Well, and of course, there's all this history between them anyway. But in the quarterfinals of the Champions League, when Barcelona have had so many knockbacks in this competition and, you know, completely missing out in recent years, it was the fact that this was just, like a lot of things since Xavi said, I'm quitting at the end of the season. This was perhaps the apex of that, of him saying, actually, you know what? I was right all along. My way is the best way. And my way, okay, I might be one of Barcelona's most iconic players of all time.
Yes.
But I'm going to do it completely differently. Mm-hmm. And you know what? You're going to love it. You're going to love it. And it may not be the Barcelona that you ideally want to see, but this is the right Barcelona for this minute. And this was a huge vindication of everything that he's been trying to do.
I think it was one of his best coach games on the whole from him. I saw a lot of maturity there. I saw a guy who had learned a lot of lessons from previous years as well. It was very interesting as well. I noticed in the first half. So Mark Andre Ter Stegen, he hit 11 long balls in the first half. So
Only. It felt like more.
yeah, I know. So only once this season in La Liga in 45 minutes has he made more. And Xavi has clearly insisted, look, you do that. And they hit Lewandowski directly. He got a knockdown, brought the ball down, and then he spread it out to either Rafinha or Yamal. And PSG could not cope with it. Lewandowski really rolled back the years in that.
He was brilliant, wasn't he?
Outstanding. He looked like shaved 10 years off him. He looked really young, really fresh, really vibrant. And Barca fans listening to this were like, we haven't seen enough of that Lewandowski. He hasn't looked like that all the time. But he was fantastic. He had a lot of space. He was dribbling with the ball. He was running with the ball as well, taking players out, creating a lot of space as well for Rafinha, like I say, and Yamal, who had numerous chances to get over and pressure PSG. And so it's little things like that, including the Pedri sub, which just regained control. Just when PSG was starting to get in their ascendancy a little bit, Pedri comes on, one of the best ball control, even though he's very, very young, hasn't been around that long. He's one of the best game controllers in world football for me. Mm. Brilliant reading of the game, vision of the game. He came on, really stemmed the floor, just put his foot down and said, look, I'm going to get in control of this game, like his boss used to, and brought Barca back into it. So it was little intricacies like that, little things that Xavi did that I was like, okay, he's learned. This is impressive.
It's intriguing, though, what Andy was saying a moment ago about, you know, the right Barcelona for this particular job. But something has happened to Barcelona since Xavi decided to announce that he won't be continuing as their coach after this season.
So are we saying he's like proper, like, you know, Michael Douglas in Falling Down? He just doesn't care anymore. He's just doing whatever he wants.
He's got no reason to. I saw a very bold, brave team last night, a young team, and admittedly, there's not many other players to choose from. He has to play the kids. They were fantastic. They were really mature.
Domestically, they haven't lost, have they, since he announced?
No, they haven't.
They haven't lost a single game since he announced that.
But everything about him has changed, I think. I mean, before, maybe it's perception, actually, because before, he just seemed irritable.
Yeah.
And now he seems devil may care. Is that the way we look at it, or is
there might be something there. The pressure's off. He's taking a bit of a weight off his shoulder. Sometimes you just have to do something like that. And like Andy says, he was very, very irritable, very snipey with the media, especially
complain about referees all the time,
like constantly. Even by Xavi's standards, it wasn't just complaining about the length of the grass like he used to always do. So yeah, you can clearly see a bit of pressure's being lifted, and Barca again playing in this bold, brave way, which they always should. They've got, I know people say they haven't got the superstars of yesteryear or what have you, but look, they've got some incredibly talented kids there who can really, really play and, you know, turn up against the best teams. We want to give a shout out to young Pau Gabasi last night as well.
Yeah, he was great.
It's absolutely remarkable. Again, 17-year-old playing like that. He should be with the youth teams, but no, he's starting at the Parc des Princes against PSG.
But I think what underlined how good Kubasi was is the fact that at the other end, Lucas Beraldo really suffered. He had a really difficult game.
Same against Real Sociedad as well. He was really troubled in that game as well. He was rattled a little bit and then kind of came into the game a little bit. But yes, I agree.
But don't you think that's... What Kubasi's doing is extraordinary. And the fact that Beraldo is going through exactly the sort of growing pains that you should be when you're getting used to top-level European football, particularly as a defender. I mean, he signs in January. He's only 20 years old. He's since become a Brazil international because he's looked very promising. But as David says, he's had a couple of like quite bad big games. This was definitely one of them. Now, you can't lay it on him because he's 20 and he's only just turned up in Europe. But I think that underlines exactly how good Kubasi is, because he looks like, I know it's cliche to say wise beyond his years, but he looks like he's played like 250 games for Barcelona.
Honestly, it looked like Prime Piqué was still playing last night. Some of the passes that he was drilling, the lead up to the first goal, the pass, he was just in front of his own area. He's picked up the ball, he's drilled a pass, he's taken out about six PSG players with this brilliant fizzed pass.
It's amazing.
Into midfield, and Barca directly transition off the back of it. Just absolutely remarkable. Again, his awareness, and look, this is what Barca do in their academy. This is what Spanish kids learn when they're in various academies up and down the country. They learn, you know, not to be overawed by the game, and they just play their stuff. They play, get it on the deck, play the passes, be aware of what's around you. And he took to that like it was just a youth game.
Like I said earlier, when I looked at Luis Enrique after the match, it looked like he had thrown away, or that his team had thrown away, not just this leg, because we're only at half time, so to speak, but had thrown away the actual fixture.
Well, I guess what would lean into that is the fact that they've only got 6 days to get it right, or much righter than they did in this first game. Because, I mean, clearly when they turned it about, and David talked about the substitution that was begging to be made, by the way, when they brought on Barcala for Asensio, and it made an instant impact. And Barcala, they just don't really want to be going into big games without him. He's so dynamic. Clearly he needs work, and this PSG team needs work, but we'll come back to that in a minute. But you can't play well for just 15 minutes in the first leg of a Champions League quarterfinal, particularly at home. And they just played well 15 minutes.
Now, that's what's confusing about this thing.
I think that's right. Now, funnily enough, because Barcelona are not the greatest Barcelona we've ever seen, if they'd have taken a chance or two more, that 15 minutes might have been enough to win them the game. If Barcala hadn't hit the crossbar when it was 2-1, for example, if that goes in, we're having a completely different conversation here. And we're saying how Luis Enrique reacted decisively and he managed to turn it around and all the rest of it. Now, I think it's fine globally if PSG go out in the quarterfinals this year of the Champions League, because I don't think anyone expected them to win it. Anyone reasonable expected them to win it at the start of the season, because Luis Enrique is trying to put his print on the team, which he's done pretty well. He's trying to express that in a very dominant domestic campaign, which they're doing very well. But he's kind of stuck between two stools, because I heard Vikash Dorosso, the former PSG midfielder, saying, well, they haven't really built the team around Mbappe. But how can you? You know he's leaving at the end of the season, so you have to build your team, but you can't really build it around the best player, which is an almost fatal juxtaposition, really. So I think that really comes out in the unevenness of it. And look, if they go out in like the Champions League quarterfinal, like I said, overall, it's not a big disaster. But if you go out in the quarterfinal of the Champions League to this Barcelona team, which is your old team, which is coached by the guy who you used to coach, when you're missing this golden opportunity, when you look at this half of the draw, the context makes it a much bigger deal than maybe it should be in the cold light of day.
Surely, though, they have to have a plan to get more out of Mbappe in the second leg, because he was anonymous. He was one of the worst players on the field, in to the point of I didn't even know he was on the field at one point. And that's this is Kylian Mbappe here, one of the best players in the world.
It's funny. I think once they'd nudged him out to left wing again, which I've no idea why Luis Enrique did that. Of all the things that he could have done, we talked about playing Asensio as the false nine. The worst bit of that is that Mbappe gets farmed back out to the left, having played the last several months at centre forward, where he's been doing very, very well. Now, that would have given Kubasi something a bit different to think about, I think. If Mbappe is in there, in that central spot from the very start. I mean, Jules Koundé, who will never really convince me that he's a right back rather than a centre half, that's the perfect role for him, really, isn't it? Yeah. You know, if you do your centre backing at right back, that's perfect for him. But I think the thing overall that was the problem for PSG is, like we talked about Beraldo before, and you've got to expect those kind of things to happen with younger players. The biggest problem is, as you say, David, Mbappe doesn't turn up. The midfield is anonymous, which again I think is a Luis Enrique problem.
I know, but how many
could have picked a different midfield.
How many years has this been the case for PSG without midfield? I feel like I've sat here for several years and said, where was their midfield? Even when they had Verratti.
Do you think they sign Thiago Motta back not as the next coach, but as a midfielder? that could be the plan, couldn't it?
I'm all for that.
I think, but the problem is the players who let them down in that game, maybe that's a bit of a strong expression. They didn't show up in a Champions League quarter final, did they? Donnarumma, again.
Wow.
It's just like, is there a point where people have to say, look, I know he was outstanding when Italy won Euro 2020. He's just not good enough for PSG, let's be honest. He's a good goalkeeper, but time and again, in these massive games, whether he's stuck to his line or coming out and getting nowhere near the ball, or whenever he's trying to play it with his feet, which, by the way, that second goal, great pass by Pedri, but Donnarumma is at the root of all of it. And you just get bored of saying it. He's so bad with his feet, it's unbelievable.
He got away with one, millimetres away from being sent off, I thought, when he rushed out to take the ball.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, probably as close to the centre spot as you can get as a goalkeeper almost. I was like, because he is a disaster waiting to happen every time you see him in a game, isn't he? Oh, for PSG at least. You know?
Yeah, well, the thing is, what he is as a goalkeeper, he's an unbelievable shot stopper. But so was David De Gea. Luis Enrique wouldn't want him as a goalkeeper either. Is why you look at Ana Tenas, who's the reserve goalkeeper for quite a lot of the season. Because he's actually good on the ball. It underlines that you can't really have him start all the games because he's quite inexperienced, but PSG look loads better, loads more assured, and it affects everything. It affects the flow of how they want to play, and it affects the fundamentals of how Luis Enrique wants his teams to play.
So, of course, there was another fixture on Wednesday evening. Atletico versus Dortmund, David. Atletico, I get the feeling that they're not convincing enough to give them the overall fixture, the second leg as well. I think there's a lot more to play for in this match. That Dortmund can turn it around, whether they will or not is another question. But it does feel a little bit open at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, on paper, I don't think Dortmund are good enough to turn it around. But I think Atletico probably is going to give them encouragement to turn it around. And I think that's what happened to that game. Atleti, this tie should be over. Out of all the ties that happened this week, this is the one that should be over, I think. Atleti had enough chances, had enough, you know, control of the game to see that off. But Atleti being Atleti, they just weren't ruthless enough. There was some very good individual performance in Atleti again, but they once again returned to type. And that is just not seeing off and killing the game. Now, look, I thought when that tie with Inter in the previous round got announced, I thought Atleti were going out. I think, my word, that Inter's going to wipe the floor with them. Strangely enough, Inter had the chances, completely didn't see off that tie when they should have. Atleti got a break there, gone through, and now Atleti should see this tie off as well, but I'm not entirely convinced that they will. They'll make it very, very difficult to do so. Sometimes that's the problem with Atleti. They make the most simple, basic things look extremely difficult. And that's the situation that they're in against, and we're going to get onto them in a minute, against just a really mediocre Dortmund side, I think.
That's the thing, isn't it? That's the key to all of this. The fact that Atleti are just so volatile, not in that kind of way. Well, as well, obviously, but you know, they're volatile in terms of it's so difficult to read on what you get from them. I think this is the hardest second leg to predict, because if you told me that they go to Dortmund and breeze through it, I believe you. If you tell me that they go to Dortmund next week and lose 4-0, I would also believe you.
Yep. Yes. Yep.
And you can't really like square that with any of the other games, can you? And as David said, they were not just totally in control for a huge chunk of this game. They were actively encouraged by Dortmund. I mean, the two goals that Dortmund conceded, just absolutely beyond belief. And you think of the first one in particular, where it's Mattsson who
they were good goals, makes the error. Let's be fair.
Good finishes, if you like.
Yeah, if you like.
But, I mean they should never happen from a Dortmund perspective. Now, if Mattsson makes the last mistake before Rodrigo de Paul scores, fair enough. But Kobel kind of initiates it by spending so long on the ball. And I know
that's the mistake, isn't it?
Yeah, I know we're getting stuck into goalkeepers and their feet today. But with that bit of Kobel, Atleti aren't a really oppressing side. But he was holding onto the ball for so long, he sort of got to the bit where Griezmann and Morata looked to each other and was like, oh, I suppose we're kind of obliged to, really, aren't we? we should probably push up 10 yards. What do you reckon?
Yeah.
And after that encouragement, they have the player who is, well, he's the best player on most pitches, in Antoine Griezmann, who can...
He was amazing.
He was fantastic. Who can... is more competitive than anyone else out there, and has the wit to control the game as well. Mm. But from there, as David says, it's absolutely extraordinary to find why they get to this bit where they nearly chuck it away in the last 20 minutes against a team that they've been so much better than for most of the night. And maybe in there, also, there's the key to why Dortmund are so handy looking in cup competitions under Edin Terzic. Like, there is no plan. There is no philosophy. Or if there's a plan or philosophy, well, the players don't get it. That's for sure. But there's still a lot of individuals. And it's a little bit like Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, Manchester United, really. That those individuals can haul you out of a lot of situations. Not every situation. They probably shouldn't be able to haul you out of a situation in the quarterfinal of the Champions League. And it's really interesting hearing Terzic talk about it afterwards. And, you know, you're not really used to hearing head coaches like chisel their own epitaphs. But he went afterwards, well, normally when you play like that in the first half hour of a Champions League quarterfinal, you are out of the entire tie. It's like, yeah, well, I wonder who we could hold responsible for that. I mean, obviously, it's heartbreaking because he's a Dortmund guy, all the rest of it. They are not doing anything consistently at this level.
Why
with him as
is
coach.
That? What has happened to both Dortmund and Atleti compared to where they were 10 years ago in the Champions League? They were the, you know, dark horses of the Champions League for pretty much a decade, weren't they? Or certainly 5 or 6 years.
For a long time, 3 finals between them.
Yeah.
It's difficult to sustain when you're not one of the traditional elite clubs, I think. I think it's really, really hard to keep up there. I think we've seen Atleti and Dortmund have a downturn in terms of their recruitment as well, which is extremely hard to sustain at that level as well, because you're still buying relatively low. You're hoping you get a nice big sale every now and then and what have you. And it's very hard to do that over 10, 12 years consistently well. And I just think that it's caught up with them, basically. I still think Atleti are, you know, trying to bring younger players through and what have you, but there's still lots of obvious gaps there. I'm talking about centre-back, which have been over several times before. And then Dortmund themselves as well. They're so far removed from the recruitment model of old that everybody used to hold up. So it does impact you on the pitch and just and on Dortmund as well. Again, they just continue to really baffle me as to what they are, what they want to be, their purpose.
You think they know? I'm not convinced they do, because when you get to the point where you're signing players like, and these are two very different players and two very different signings, but when you sign back Jadon Sancho, for example, who they were really against getting back as recently as, say, 6 months ago, like, it's such a short-term fix. And then you look at Haller, who like is an extraordinary story, of course, and he's done amazingly in some ways. The second half of last season, he was brilliant after he returned from cancer, of course. This season, he had not scored in the Bundesliga or the Champions League until this game. Like, great point to break your duck, but for the rest of the season, you know, it's been really tough. And even when you go back to before that, you know, there's an argument, should you be signing a player like that anyway? You know, should you be maybe going for a younger player with a higher ceiling? Now, I realise you need experienced players in the team, but, you know, there's just no joined up thinking in the recruitment at all. Everything is to, you know, in the words of Gil Scott-Heron, just a patch. Until this was patched, until that was patched. It's all just the here and now, the short term. And Füllkrug is that as well. Füllkrug is like a decent enough signing. But where's the plan? You're signing someone in their late 20s who can, or into his 30s now, who can just, you know, hold an end up.
Yeah.
That's it, really? And they were always more ambitious than that. They were always more dynamic than that.
And now
they're not.
On and off the field. And look, is it conducive, you know, for a young player to go to Dortmund, playing that current style of football? It doesn't enhance you, doesn't improve you as a player.
Yeah, so probably, I don't think it does, no.
So Dortmund's got that problem as well. They need a coach who enhances and improves the players, not just for Dortmund themselves to, you know, to compete at the top of the table again, but also that is, you know, inherently in line with their model.
That's how you get the next Sancho, isn't it?
Yeah.
By saying, if you come here, or the next Bellingham, or the next Haaland, you know, you have to ask, in the direction in which they're going, does the next Haaland or Bellingham or Sancho actually want to go there? I mean, do you look instead at, say, Felix Metscher, who was like anonymous in this? He touched the ball three times in the first half, which for a midfield player is just unbelievable. Now, of course, he's lost a big chunk of this season to injury, but there's someone with huge potential.
Massive, yeah.
Are they helping him realise it? The best. Now, I realise they can't do anything about the injury side of it, but you know, the rest of it, in what way has he improved since he's arrived?
He's got the most to lose for the next leg, or for this tie. Who's got the most to lose by not making it through?
I think that's a good question, because the other thing we haven't mentioned, of course, is they're both kind of on the cusp. Neither of them are sure of fourth place either. So, do they have to win it to get back in it? It's not definite, but it's a possibility, isn't it?
Yeah. I think they've both got a hell of a lot to lose. I think out of all the clubs, these are the two ones who would really suffer, I think, if they don't go through the next round, especially considering what they've both got going on off the pitch. Dortmund really need the money. Atleti really need the money as well. And also, again, I'll bring it up, Atleti's squad is a little bit older now. Morata, Griezmann, they've got to look at it and go, oh, how many times do we go again with these same players?
As sooner or later, that's the thing with Griezmann and Morata. At some point, you have to replace them.
Yeah.
And that will cost the sort of money that they're just not prepared to spend at the moment. So where does that leave them in 2 or 3 years' time? Yeah. Like, the medium term looks actually quite bleak for both of these clubs, I think. Always like to end on a happy note.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Arguably, the business side of the Champions League were the Tuesday evening fixtures. Those who know better than me, people like yourselves, are suggesting and have been suggesting that the winner of the Champions League this season will be in that half. Well, it's not a huge mystery to understand that Man City, the current holders, are in that half of the fixtures that we saw on Tuesday night. Two great matches, actually. Two very open and watchable matches. Man City on the... Well, they both drew, didn't they? Mm-hmm. for some reason, both of those matches ended in a draw. But if we're being frank, who is it now that is in the driver's seat, do you think, after those first legs? The Man City won, the Arsenal won as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, this was discussed as the side of the draw where the winners are. But my word, they wanted to plant some seeds of doubt in your head.
Is this Man City versus Real Madrid? Should we start with that then?
Yeah, let's start with that. Yeah, I was going to say, I think, you know, this was a really tough one to call at the start. Anyway, I think this was probably the one that a lot of people wanted to see as a final, quite frankly. And it was interesting to see how it played out in that. Real Madrid kind of started off in their own mad way, as they have often done in the Champions League. And they were punished for it early on. And then they rallied back brilliantly to the point that they dominated for a while. And then the second half, City just started to find their main men. They started to find Phil Foden, and everybody was spinning off him and everything was working really nicely. And then I think we had that absolutely ridiculous Fede Valverde goal, which still doesn't make any sense to me. He has caught that so perfectly. I think he could hit that 100 times and maybe once or twice have it hit like that. So it's just so hard to call. And it honestly is. You'd have to really go out on a limb to say, oh, there's a clear favourite here. Because I don't think there is. And that's what makes it interesting. That's great for the viewer. That's absolutely fantastic. I think it is on that side of the draw, anyone's at all.
I guess that's the thing. The biggest challenge for Manchester City, arguably, is quite similar to PSG's challenge, although they're in a better situation, clearly, is that if you'd have said before this week of games, we're going to have an absolute ding-dong week. We're going to have four Champions League quarterfinals that you will not only love, but you might want to rewatch at the end of the week. They were that good. On which, Haaland and Mbappe, arguably the next two great players of the world, are going to have next to no influence.
In Bellingham as well. Bellingham was very much... Yes, that was one of the quietest Jude Bellingham games I've seen in a while as well. And everything was going down the side. So yeah, he wasn't really in it to that sense. So that was really interesting. Yeah, your future faces, your next up.
So bottom line, Phil Foden's the best player in the world.
That's pretty
end
much
end
it.
End of discussion.
Yeah,
that's not a bad place to be. And like David said, once they found him in the second half, it was a different game. You knew it was coming, didn't you? You knew it was coming.
Yeah.
He had something to do with almost every positive move towards goal that Man City had. Are we saying then that when the ties go back, well, the Man City one goes to the Etihad that Man City won't be able to cope with Real Madrid? Because surely they've got the advantage now, have they?
Real Madrid's going to score. Absolutely. I think, you know, if
they give you chances this season,
yeah, exactly. I think if I really had a gun in my head, I'd probably still say that Man City are favourites for the Champions League.
Yeah.
I still put them in narrow favourites though. But yeah, they're going to be got at. And Real Madrid, I think, are going to play the same tactic, because Man City, if you watch them in the Premier League, they're very susceptible with balls in over the top behind their fullbacks. It really, really hurts them. And it was very interesting that how Real Madrid really targeted that, and they saw that when they saw that Kyle Walker wasn't available, Akanji was really, really up against it. And it was a smart way to go, I think. And they did it on the other side of the field as well. So I think they'll do that again.
It's an interesting point, actually, that I sort of jokingly said how, going back about a year, how Pep Guardiola was turning into Diego Maradona at the 2010 World Cup by playing four centre-backs in defence. But I think once you go up against, say, Vinicius and Rodrigo, it does kind of look like that. I still feel, I guess the thing with City is you feel there is an extra gear to hit. The question is whether they hit it, because they've been hitting it regularly in the second half of this season. Now, we've sort of come to think, with Pep Guardiola being how Guardiola is, with City being how City are, that they are just going to hit their inevitable City period in the run-in. But they've not got there yet. I mean, them at quite good level is still better than pretty much everyone else. That's the thing, isn't it? But I think you are looking at experience here, and I think that's why City-Real Madrid is still quite difficult to call, because there's comparable experience. Obviously, Real Madrid have maybe a slight disadvantage in terms of ability and slight advantage in terms of experience. And that's the interesting leveller in Arsenal versus Bayern as well. Because now, we don't want to overcook it. We don't want to say this is a bad Bayern side. It isn't a bad Bayern side. It's a Bayern side with issues, a Bayern side that has had issues for the last couple of years, as we've talked about endlessly on here, and you've continue to pretend to be interested, which has been very good of you.
You're welcome.
But I think this underlined where Bayern can close that ability gap with Arsenal, because it's a very, very good Arsenal side. But again, as we said earlier in the week, an Arsenal side that really has the ability to win the Premier League and has the ability to win the Champions League. But experience-wise, you just don't quite believe it, and you wonder if they believe it as well, because for Arsenal to come out of that a little bit grateful that they got a draw, I mean, you know, in terms of what they are and the direction they're going, they should be putting this Bayern team away. But I think, you know, you saw the problems they had in terms of experience in managing a tie against Porto in the last round again. Mm. A team that they should put away with great comfort. Now, Bayern are not a team that they should put away with great comfort. They're a team they should be able to put away, which is the difference. But you saw exactly what it is to be effective in this competition in that game, I think.
And they're short of that, are they?
Yeah, I think so. And that's why, if if you assume the winner is in this half, it could be any of these four. I don't think it will be. I don't think it will be Arsenal, just like I don't think it will be Bayern. But of course, like Bayern, like say a Chelsea in 2012, for example, you know, it's a cup competition. You can have a team that's not the best team win it. And I guess what adds to that feeling, David, like more than most years, is the fact that City are not last year's City, at least not yet.
No, absolutely not. They'll click at a certain point. And I think just moving back to Bayern for a second as well, the big factor is their league's over for them. Mm. They can rest players now a lot. Arsenal's very much in the thick of it. They're under pressure. Bayern can relax ahead of this game.
Let's say at the weekend, Leverkusen beat Werder Bremen, as everyone expects them to do, and they're crowned German champions, the first new German champion since 2012. How angry are Bayern for this second leg at the Allianz Arena? It's an interesting extra factor, isn't it?
It's significant. And also, the Premier League sides are playing a lot of football right now. They've just off the stretch what they've just played coming into these games. It's not ideal preparation for facing some of the best teams around Europe.
You're right. The demands, even to be in the top three of the Premier League at the moment, are extraordinary because the top three are so good.
Yeah. And not just the top three. They're in other competitions as well, remember?
Yes.
Man City, certainly. But tell me this, though. Have we missed maybe one of the obvious noticeable points about these ties is that they've all got these really successful managers. And I wonder whether it's the second legs are not about coaches, great coaches, Pep Guardiola, of course, facing his nemesis to a certain extent in the Real Madrid coach who's won more Champions League than everybody else. And then you've got Mikel Arteta up against, well, the Bayern coach who we've seen before, Thomas Tuchel, over this side. We know how great the teams are. We know how great the individual players are.
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder whether once you sort of match players v players, that it's more about the coaching to get to the semi-finals of the Champions League.
Well, we talked about that earlier, didn't we? In terms of Luis Enrique and how he kind of flunked this exam, really, didn't he? You know, I'm not laying it all on him by any means, but he didn't get it right this week. Tuchel, on the other hand, we talked about Xavi, knowing he's on the way out. Now, Bayern have not reacted in the same way to Barcelona to the news that their coach is off, it is fair to say. However, I think when we talk about how erratic Tuchel has been at Bayern and Bayern have been under Tuchel, he's still a coach who's won the Champions League. He's still a coach who's been in the final of the Champions League. And those are both in recent years. We're not talking about historically or anything like that. He is someone who is having a hand in shaping the modern Champions League. Like, whatever you think of him as a coach.
And he's quite evidently auditioning for his next job in these games.
Well, why not? Everybody's got to work.
I was watching him on the lead up to this game and just the interviews and what have you doing and just everything, the press around the games. And I was just like, that's a man who is really, really auditioning hard.
Yeah.
For the Man United job or wherever it may be, he really wants that.
He'll get a job, no doubt.
Yeah.
But what did you mean, Andy, when you said that he has shaped the modern Champions League?
Well, I think the way that football has changed, he has... In the Champions League, he's definitely had a hand in that. If you look at the way that Chelsea win it in 2021, and you look at the way that PSG accelerate past, say, RB Leipzig, and I know that's an exceptional year because of COVID and all that sort of stuff, but the way they accelerate past Nagelsmann's Leipzig in the semis, and actually the way that Bayern played at Arsenal this week, we talk about Tuchel as someone who... is very precise. But actually, I think there's great brutality to the way his teams play. And that's certainly the way that Chelsea won the Champions League in 2021. Whereas I think Bayern are sort of fighting through this like fog of chaos at the moment. And they are, I mean, my God, they need a lot of sorting out. There's no doubt about that. But they were just dealing in this game with the here and now. You know, the realization that you're going to make mistakes, the realization that there are going to be those difficult bits, but there was just this extra little bit of force there. Now, I think part of that is having Leon Goretzka in midfield, and I don't think he's picked him enough. Now, partly he hasn't been able to because of injuries and stuff, but you look at the performance of him, Gnabry, who's not been able to perform because he's only started four league games.
He was really good. He put in a real shift.
He was excellent.
Yeah.
I think Zane, until they took him off.
Yeah.
This is not vintage Bayern, but there is just a little something about them. I wonder, no one wants to talk about it because he's on the way, but I wonder if Tuchel is a part of that, actually.
Well, it's great that you're bigging up Tuchel, but would you not also, David, have to big up Carlo Ancelotti for shaping the modern Champions League? Would you not also have to big up Pep Guardiola for shaping the modern Champions League?
But until,
and maybe the only odd man out is Mikel Arteta in that form.
But I suppose it's how you how you define modern, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because what I said about Tuchel, we are talking about the immediate past of the Champions League. Well, the interesting thing about Guardiola is until he won it last year, he hadn't won it since 2011.
Sure, but arguably his teams had helped to shape the modern
Champions League. You're right in that shaping football is more than about the trophies. Like, for example, if you look at how Guardiola shaped Bayern, for example, he didn't win the Champions League, he didn't even get in a final in the 3 years that he was there. But he made a massive, indelible mark on the way that Bayern play football. Mm. And actually, it's been a mark that's been quite difficult to hit for other coaches since, because it was such an aesthetic perfection, really, wasn't it?
I was going to say, that's the problem. I think, you know, you'll have certain coaches, and we discussed it on Ask OTC last week when we asked who's the most influential coaches. And it does, this happens, they get these influences in terms of what they do, in terms of their coaching, their setup and such. And they are very, very good at, and you get so many people trying to replicate it all the time. And I think they get crushed under it all, because sometimes you do have to just carve your own way, be your own man. You can't be constantly replicating things all the time. I think Arteta, for instance, let's just take him, huge influences of Guardiola, absolutely. But there's also several instances of things that can go, oh, Arteta's brought that in. I think, in terms of the wide overloads and the numerical advantage Arsenal create in wide areas from players cutting in on angles. That's something I hadn't seen fully before Arteta had done it. So there's little nuances like that that are really, really interesting. And I think going back to the original question as well, don't get me wrong, tactics, strategy is going to have a lot to play in this. But if anything, from the games that we have just seen this week, individual moments of brilliance are still so, so huge. The Valverde volley, Foden coming into the game in the second half with his goal, Pedri coming on in the second half with his pass. Ousmane Dembele, he didn't look like a man who was going to pull a goal out in that first half, but it was a bit of individual brilliance from him for that rocket strike, and it changes the game. So Arsenal put a lot of onus on individual brilliance in the Champions League at this point.
Yeah, and it's good that you mentioned the games this week, because it's going to put pressure on both of you as we ask you to recommend a game of the week for us. I mean, to compete with the ones that we've seen this week, you're going to have to work hard, gentlemen. Andy, do you want to go first on this?
I think I'm going to go for Lyon versus Brest on Sunday night. I think it's a really interesting one. Lyon have been incredible under Pierre Sage. They're starting to build a philosophy. The results came first. Sage will probably stay now. The academy boss, he was given the job when Lyon were bottom of the table, and he's got them not only out of relegation trouble, into the top 10, in touching distance of European football through the league, which would be remarkable, because bear in mind they had 7 points after 14 games. No previous side has survived after such a low total at that point in the season. And they're into the Coupe de France final. So they have two possible routes to Europe. And they're playing Brest, who are the fairy tale of the division, and who have not only extraordinarily overperformed under Eric Waugh, but now they're saying for the first time, okay, we're in it. We are going to try and qualify for the Champions League. They've never dared say it out loud before, but I think they've started to trust themselves.
How important is this game, though, for that?
I think it's big enough for Brest, but I think, to me, they should go and win this, because Lyon are massively improved. They may have the more high-spec players, but Brest, in terms of a working model, I think there's none better in Ligue 1. They're amazing, and they're definitely worth a watch. I think for this, well, obviously, we're talking about the gastronomical capital of Europe.
What, is that Brest?
No, Lyon.
Well, no.
Look, if you want a sardine sandwich, be my guest. Yeah. I think you might sardine be better eating the cling film, to be perfectly honest.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
But look, I think you roll up plenty of time before kickoff for a nice plat du jour somewhere in Vieux-Lyon, in the old town. And you're going to need to do it ages before kickoff, because it takes quite a while to get to the stadium. It's outside of the centre. Well, I think you're going to have to go for You're probably going to have to go for Andy Yet.
And what's that?
It's a sort of sausage made out of pig's guts.
Okay,
it's something that you can't eat all the time.
Of course not.
Listeners really licking their lips, hearing the word guts.
Now and then, you have to give a nod to tradition.
Of course. It's all full of guts, that tradition, and you've got something much healthier for us to eat. But let's talk about the match you'd recommend first, David.
Yeah, I'm going to show some guts and watch Atleti again. So Atleti play Girona this weekend, 1 o'clock Saturday.
Ooh, in between the legs. Yeah,
which is quite a nice little game. So Atleti can close the gap on Girona, who are in third of this game, to 4 points, if they can pull off this. So obviously they're coming back after a tough Champions League tie, but they're still in and around it for the league as well. But I think they'll have to win this game. A loss here would be catastrophic, I think. But Girona fell away a little bit. I know they've been one of the fairy tale stories of the season. They fell a little bit, not quite performing at the high level, which is understandable, really. There's always going to be a limit to that. But Atleti can keep on going and put some pressure on at the top of the league, I think, with a win here.
So. Is Girona on the downward trajectory now? Will Atleti catch them up?
This is what this game's about. So, yeah, they can close the gap. Don't get me wrong, Girona's still doing really well and they're still there or thereabouts. But they were always going to fall away slightly. I think the high levels that they had. I mean, when the two met before, earlier in the season, I think they were 2 points clear at the top of the league and they beat Atleti 4-3. It was a really, really good game.
I remember that.
Yeah. So this one should be another really entertaining one. In terms of food pairing there, I'm going to go for a nice, very simple steak sandwich. Get a nice baguette, nice steak, dice all that up, get in the sandwich. Beautiful. Nice.
Have you learned from that, Andy? No more guts, for goodness sake. Thank you for listening to On The Air.
I won't have digested Saturday's meal. I have a couple of breadsticks on Sunday. I take it all back.
Thank you for listening to On The Continent. And do make sure that you join us again tomorrow for Ask OTC, where we'll be answering all of your questions about the latest news from the world of European football. And do make sure to subscribe in your podcast app so that you never miss an episode.
On the Continent is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.